Ravana had 10 heads. He was very huge. He was the son of a Brahmana, actually. And he knew Vedic knowledge in terms of the Vedic arts and sciences. However, of course, he was completely anti-Krishna. Ravana was so powerful, he built the city of gold. And his ambition was to build a stairway to the heavenly planets so that no one in his city would have to perform pious activities in order to get to the heavenly planets. They could just climb his staircase. In this way, he thought he had it all figured out, how to make pious activities unnecessary. So everything appeared to be going quite well for Ravana, as always. For demons, everything appears to be going quite well for some time. Sometimes we even get that impression about the demoniac civilization today. It's going on okay. Some or other, there aren't that many severe problems. Of course, we forget that at least twice in this century, the whole world has been enveloped in huge world wars. How short our memory is. How short. And just 30 years ago, 25 years ago, the young men of both the USA and Australia were being sent to the jungles of Vietnam. How short our memory is. We're so prone to thinking that, yes, society is very hellish and sinful, but it's going on, and I guess it'll always be that way. No, again and again, Krishna shows us that when people try to live independent of the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will be destroyed this way or that way. Ravana made the mistake of kidnapping Ramchandra's wife, Sita Devi. Sita Devi is not an ordinary woman, and she's not even Durga Devi. Sita is the internal potency of the Lord. And Ramchandra's brothers, they are not ordinary persons. Sometimes the confusion is there in India that Ramchandra's brothers were ordinary, although Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, all of Ramchandra's brothers, Bart, Shatrughna, Lakshman, they are all expansions of Godhead, specifically the Chaturvyuha. They were all equally the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Ravana made the mistake of kidnapping Sita Devi. Actually, of course, you all know the technical detail that it is not possible for a demon to touch the Lord's internal potency. Therefore, all Ravana got was a Maya approximation of Sita Devi. Today's verse we'll read tonight. Lord Ramachandra is speaking to Ravana just before he kills him. So since this is Ram Vijay, we want to meditate concentratedly on the killing of Ravana. Ramas tamaha purushara parishayanna kanta samaksham asata paritta svavate chapta trapasya palamajya jugupshitasya yachchamikala eva kartur alangya virya. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog, for as a dog steals eatables from the kitchen in the absence of the householder, in my absence, you kidnap my wife Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you." So what is the attitude that Ravana represents? That attitude you will find in so-called civilization today. That is, let us exploit nature and deny the supremacy of Krishna. Even the so-called environmental and ecological movements They do not acknowledge the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are simply standing for more benign exploitation. Let us exploit, but with more delicacy and more gentleness. In other words, still, nature is ours. That is the mistake. We are the enjoyers, and we are the controllers. It's simply that we should learn how to deal with nature in a way that is beneficial for us. And sometimes when people in the environmental or ecological movements become more broad, they say that nature doesn't simply belong to the human beings, it belongs to all species. Therefore, we should deal with nature so that all species prosper and benefit. But that is also wrong. Nature does not belong to the human beings, nor does it belong to all the different species of life. Nature belongs to Krishna. It is Krishna's nature. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mayadakshena Prakriti, Suyate Satcharatra. It is my material nature under my direction. It's going through so many phases. So this attitude of wanting to exploit nature and deny the supremacy of Krishna, that is what you find concentrated in Ravana. Ravana was so super about his demoniac nature, his demoniac pride, that he was killed directly by Lord Ram. Today's demons, however, they're very insignificant compared to Ravana. After Ravana was killed, his wife lamented very much. Actually, although Ravana was a great demon, his wife, Mandodari, is celebrated as one of the great chaste women of all time. There are five super chaste women who are exalted in the Vedic literatures. One is Ravana's wife, another is Draupadi, another is, of course, Sita Devi, another is Gandhari, Dhritarashtra's wife. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that because Mandodari was so chaste, she was endowed with supernatural power, and similarly, any woman who is very chaste, she will become endowed with very special supernatural power. When Ravana was killed, Mandodari came out and lamented for him. But she said, how could you expect to prosper? You insulted Lord Ram. You took his wife away. How could you expect any good to come from you? And similarly, you will find members of the present civilization lamenting. Why do we pursue the path we are on now? Now there is so much social disturbance. Now there is so much reaction from nature. Why did we do it? Some people will learn by hearing. Some people will learn by experience. Ravana did not learn at all until he was killed by Lord Ramchandra. And even after he was dead, Lord Ramchandra did arrange for the performance of his funeral ceremony. So when we meditate on the killing of Ravana, we'll have the play, and we have the effigy of Ravana outside, ready to be killed. We should understand what Ravana is all about. Even remember, he had Vedic knowledge. He was the son of a Brahmana, but he hated the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He hated the supremacy of Vishnu, and therefore he sowed the seeds for his own destruction, especially by kidnapping Sita Devi, wanting to enjoy the Lord's energy. This is why our own desire to enjoy gets us into trouble. It is illegal and illicit for the jiva to be the enjoyer. And Ravana was the personification par excellence of that illicit desire to enjoy what belongs to someone else. Just like in civilized society, everyone knows, you do not try to enjoy someone else's married partner. Similarly, we do not try to enjoy Krishna's energy. That is illegal and illicit. We use Krishna's energy for his pleasure. Therefore, it's also a good idea, as we're watching Ravana being slain, it's a good idea to pray to Lord Ram to please slay the enjoying propensity that we have illicitly in our hearts. We can study the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Divine and Demoniac Nature, and Krishna very clearly describes the qualities of the demons. Asatyam, Apratisyam Te, Jagadavaranishwaram. They say this world is unreal. It has no other foundation. No foundation, no one in control. Only came about by lust. Each demoniac person is thinking, Ishvaraham Bhogi Siddham Balavan Sukhi. I'm the controller. I'm the enjoyer. I'm so powerful. I'm so happy all the time. This is demoniac. And when you proceed with that attitude to interact with Krishna's energy as if it's yours, without acknowledging the supremacy of Krishna, without paying attention to his instructions how to live in this world, you can only get the same result as Ravana did. Now, the demons of today are not as powerful to warrant Krishna killing them personally as Lord Ram. But they will be killed. There has never in the history of this earth been a time when a materialistic civilization lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts. It has never happened. And people are always surprised and astonished. For example, if you look at Rome, the decline of Rome. In the year 380 AD, everything seemed to be normal in the Roman Empire. 30 years later, all of Rome was trashed and sacked by so many wild tribes. Everything was finished. People were being killed in the streets. All in 30 years, nobody expected it. Again and again, life in this world shows you that. You think things are always going to go on, and then massive destruction comes. We forget that only 50 years ago, 50 million people died in World War II. We forget that. We are very comfortable watching the television or reading the newspapers about Bosnia or Rwanda or other places where mass slaughter is going on, Chechnya. And, well, that's over there. It'll never happen where I am. Trust Maya, it'll never happen where I am. Everybody feels that way. And that false sense of security causes us great problems. How can there be security when the laws of Krishna are being disobeyed? Not possible. That is what we should be understanding as we celebrate the death of Ravana. Not possible. Ravana was so powerful, much more powerful than any leaders today. His kingdom of Lanka was much more opulent than any nation or city today. A city made of gold. A city attempting to build a staircase to the heavenly planets. Something that would make the space shuttles look silly and useless. Yet, all finished very quickly by the arrows from Lord Ramachandra's bow. These are some things we can meditate today on Ram Vijay, the celebration of the victory of Lord Ram. Any questions? Yes. A devotee is not involved in trying to enjoy his good karma or lamenting his bad karma. A devotee is absorbed in devotional service. Furthermore, it is impossible in reality for a jiva to be the enjoyer. It is constitutionally impossible. The only way it is possible is in a dream. You can dream you are the enjoyer. Material existence is the dream of the soul thinking, I am the enjoyer. Actually, material existence never involves the pure soul. The pure soul never loses its purity. It never becomes contaminated by material existence. Material existence is a dream that occurs by the arrangement of the Lord's external energy. And in that dream, you imagine, I am the enjoyer. I shall imitate Krishna. But in actuality, in reality, it is impossible. Krishna is the only enjoyer. We are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. And as far as good karma and bad karma, that is all external. And one who is a devotee, his concentration is absorption in devotional service, not worrying about his good karma or his bad karma. These things come and go on the external plane, but a devotee is absorbed in the internal, bhakti yoga. As we were saying this morning, devotee means devotional service. It doesn't mean to be a card-carrying official member of a religion. Devotee means my senses and mind are engaged in bhakti. That goes on, that can go on all the time, regardless of what the karma is. In fact, for one who is engaged in devotional service, he or she doesn't even get regular karma. You get something that is personally dispensed by Krishna. Therefore, Lord Brahma says in the Brahma Samhita, Karmani nadahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindam adi purusham tam mahamajami. You get minimized sinful reactions, but not your real karma as you are supposed to have got. These are the special treatments that a devotee gets personally from Krishna. So we should not become overly absorbed in these analyses of what is my past bad karma and good karma, and even let me find someone who matches my past karma or whatever. You know, this just goes on and on and on. We should look for devotional service, because Prabhupada has given us the means to rise above the karma. Okay, we have bodies. Whatever these bodies are, whatever influences these bodies have been composed of, that's another thing. But we have devotional service. That is the most important thing. So just as Ram killed Ravana, certainly devotional service can kill our material desires and burn up our past karma, both good and bad. Any other questions? You all ready? Okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Prabhupada.
This is a very famous verse Srila Prabhupada I'd like to quote very much. By Prahlad Maharaj. Nothing on the board. Naito jije paragadachara vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahanritam agnachitta shocheta toba mukacheta sa indriyata maya sukhaya paramud vahato vimudan. Naivo dvije paradarachaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta shocheta toga mukacheta sa indriyata maya sukaya baramud vahato vimudhan. Naivo dvije paradarachaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta shocheta toga mukacheta sa indriyata maya sukaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. Na.
Na.
Not.
Na.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Udvijay.
I am disturbed or afraid. Or afraid. Pada.
Pada.
O Supreme.
Duratjaya.
Insurmountable. Or very difficult to cross.
Vaitaranya.
Of the Vaitarani. The river of the material world.
Tvatvirya.
Of your lordship's glories and activities.
Dayana.
From chanting or distributing.
Mahamrita.
In the great ocean of nectarian spiritual bliss.
Magnachitta.
Whose consciousness is absorbed.
Shoche.
I am simply lamenting.
Tata.
From that.
Gamukha Chetasa.
The fools and rascals who are bereft of Krishna consciousness.
Indriya Artha.
In sense gratification.
Maya Sukaya.
For temporary illusory happiness.
Varam.
The false burden or responsibility of maintaining one's family, society, and nation, and elaborate arrangements for that purpose.
Udvahata,
who are lifting by making grand plans for this arrangement.
Vimudan,
although all of them are nothing but fools and rascals. I am thinking of them also. Translation. Oh, best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. Purport. Throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world. And this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. Nonetheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have all been described herein as vimuda, fools. The material world has been described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkalayama shashvatam, temporary and miserable. But these fools are trying to turn the material world into sukhalayam, a place of happiness, not knowing how everything acts by the arrangement of material nature, which works in her own way. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya ahankara vimudatma katahamityamanyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. There is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, to punish the demons. Although the asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands, with different types of weapons, to punish them. She is carried by her lion carrier, or the modes of passion and ignorance. Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature, but at the end, everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. It's a long purport. Stop there at this point. Om Ajana Timurandasya Ajananjana Shalapaya Chakshya Malitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. As we were saying, this is a very favorite verse of Srila Prabhupada's. And this verse shows you that Krishna consciousness is full of personal love, care, and concern. Sometimes, in our difficult moments, we think, oh, where is the love between devotees? Where is the care? Where is the concern? And we feel pressed to look in the outside world, shall we say, for these things, because we feel that the society of devotees is lacking in love, mutual concern, and compassion. Of course, we have to bear in mind what Srila Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the Krishna Consciousness Organization is like a hospital. And we are all coming with various diseases. And because we are coming with diseases, there's always a possibility of relapses. There's always a possibility of germs invading the hospital. But Srila Prabhupada explained that the expert doctor is always keeping the hospital sterile. So you have two things going on all the time. You've got an atmosphere which is prone to infection because patients are coming to the hospital with disease. If they didn't have disease, then they wouldn't come to the hospital. There'd be no need. Just like in Satya Yuga, the scriptures say that in the Satya Yuga, everyone is more or less Paramahansa. There's not even really Varnashram Dharma. There's just one category of persons called the Hamsas, swan-like persons. But this is Kali Yuga, and in Kali Yuga especially, we need hospital endeavors in order to rid ourselves of disease. So, on the one hand, there's always a possibility that diseases break out in the hospital even. And on the other hand, the expert doctors are always trying to keep the place sterile. So these two things are going on all the time. Well, how is it that our love, compassion, and concern for each other is shown in Krishna consciousness? Through the medium of devotional service. Because, as we were speaking the past few days, without the medium of devotional service, Krishna consciousness is meaningless. Devotee means devotional service. And the whole thrust of a devotee's lifestyle is how, through the medium of devotional service, to see everything properly in relationship to Krishna. Just like in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami gives six loving exchanges that devotees share with one another. And if you take that exactly as Rupa Goswami presents it, exchanging gifts, exchanging confidences, exchanging prasad, you'll find that there is a wealth of personal interaction and reciprocation that can be built up just on those six loving exchanges. Devotee means he's performing devotional service. We found out in the previous verse yesterday that because Krishna, the original spiritual master of the entire world, is managing the affairs of the universe, what's the difficulty in Krishna delivering devotees who are engaged in devotional service? If Krishna can arrange for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this universe, certainly Krishna can arrange to deliver his devotees who are engaged in devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj has that conviction, and he's pointing out to us that don't think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is devoid of care and compassion. It's like I was talking to one devotee yesterday or the day before, and he was explaining how he went through some heavy crisis, a big blow in his personal life, and somehow he felt that, well, I just can't go on with my spiritual practices. In other words, the unspoken truth is, why did Krishna let this happen to me? I was serving him, I was trying to be staunch, and boom, you know, kind of the rug was yanked out from under me. And when those things happen, we tend to think, where is the compassion, where is the love coming from Krishna? And then we also begin to think, where is the love and compassion coming from the devotees? And then the material energy says, you are right. I'll tell you where to look to find that love and compassion. And we say, yes, that's it. Oh, how could I have forgotten? My old friend Maya, full of reciprocation, full of nourishment and fulfillment, meaning, purpose, a sense of connectedness, a sense of integrity, all these things Maya will give to me, especially this time.
I know how to indulge in Maya properly without getting too much carried away. I'll still take a shower in the morning, and I will still be a vegetarian and mostly offer my food, except when it's an embarrassing situation. And I won't get carried away too much, but probably in order to balance myself, I've got to go through this, in order to balance myself. You know, each of us has to learn his or her lesson. And you've just got to take those things that come along, especially if they look good for your senses, you've got to take them as they come along and get into it, and not too much, though, but just learn what you got to learn. And surely you'll come through it all, because that's just the way it is. I mean, why artificially try to avoid what you got to go through? Especially when it's kind of nice. Why avoid? And after all is said and done, sooner or later, Prabhupada's mercy will rescue us, and it all works out anyway. So since it's all going to work out anyway, why not just take a little detour and experience a few things that you got to experience? Because if you don't experience them, you're never going to be really renounced. And of course, that's my goal, to really be renounced. But therefore, to really be renounced, I got to experience a few things. It all makes sense. And certainly, Krishna will understand that. That's Krishna's job, to understand my needs and to know what I got to go through. So, in this way, we get really lost in the illusory energy, and we even start to forget the philosophy, and we, in fact, start to forget Prabhupada's compassion and mercy, and Krishna's compassion and mercy. That is the great tragedy. Krishna does have the infinite concern and compassion for us. And how does Krishna show that compassion? By awarding us chances for devotional service, and by awarding us the holy name, and by giving us the association of devotees. Based on these things, certainly we can always be mindful of how Krishna is concerned with every aspect, the smallest aspect of our life. We don't want to forget that. Of course, how not to forget Krishna's compassion and concern for us? We must always try to be engaged in devotional service. Now, in today's verse, Prahlad Maharaj says that he's not afraid of material existence. Sometimes the great Mahabharata speak in that way. Naivo dvijay padatavatya vaitranyas. I'm not disturbed or afraid by material existence. Other times, they'll say, look at things from another angle. Just like Prabhupada once said that the only difference between himself and his disciples was that he was always praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. Whereas his disciples had no real fear of Maya. That is an important psychological point to analyze in our psychological makeup. This inherent trust in Maya, this inherent feeling that there'll be some security and stability in Maya. This is a flaw in our character. So Prabhupada said that, of course, he being very humble and magnanimous, that's the only difference between himself and his disciples, that he's always praying to Krishna at every moment, please don't let me fall down. And elsewhere in the 10th canto, it is said that a pure devotee has fear of material existence, and by that fear, he maintains his purity and becomes increasingly more pure on the spiritual platform. So there's different ways of looking at it. What Prahlad Maharaj is emphasizing here is that because he's always absorbed in the Mahamrita, the great ocean, the great nectarian ocean of hearing and chanting and distributing Krishna's glories, that has far exceeded any fear of material existence that he has. So this verse is full of feeling, and it's full of personalism. First of all, he's saying, I'm not afraid. Why? Because I'm fully absorbed. But what is my only concern? Shoche tato. Prabhupada would love to dwell on that line. Shoche tato vamukhachetas indriyata. I am lamenting. I have concern. I have deep, deep feelings. About what? That I look around and I see so many, he calls them fools, Muha means fool, and in Sanskrit, when you have V in front of it, it means especially. Vimuda means especially foolish. So he says, my only concern and anxiety and lamentation is about the especially foolish persons who are making grand plans to do what? To lift a false burden. Maya Sakaya Brahm Udvahato Vimuda. Brahm means the false burden or responsibility. And Prabhupada here kind of taxed the synonym with some points for benefit. What is the false burden or responsibility? Of maintaining one's family, society, and nation, and elaborate arrangements for that purpose. So sometimes we can feel a little tight around the collar when we start to hear that. False burden of responsibility. For too long, we've seen, for example, those who are householders ignoring their family responsibilities and dropping everything and leaving husband, wife, children, and just pretending to be renounced. Enough of that. We should not consider it a false burden. We should consider it is devotional service, and one should take it very seriously and immerse yourself deeply into it, and in that way, that's the best thing for the preaching. We'll discuss that more later. It is a very difficult point in one sense, not difficult in another. In any case, Prahlad Maharaj has feelings, and he's showing the way as a Mahajan, as one of the 12 great preceptors in bhakti. He's showing the way how to manifest feeling and personalism in devotional service. A devotee is always thinking in the line of Prahlad Maharaj, what about the others who are not Krishna conscious? And amongst other devotees, a devotee is always thinking, how can I either enliven the other devotees or be enlivened by them in Krishna consciousness? But the medium is always devotional service, because without the ocean of devotional service that you're swimming in, you're on dry land. In other words, a fish has no meaning on dry land. Similarly, a devotee has no meaning unless he's immersed in the ocean of devotional service. Now, within that ocean of devotional service, we are finding that if indeed we're going to serve Krishna effectively, we've got to get along with each other. And we've got to be sensitive towards one another. Otherwise, the service won't go on properly. But it's all within the context of devotional service. If we're going to maintain a proper farm community or a proper temple, or even a few Sankirtan devotees in the van or in the car for more than a couple of days, if that's going to go on, if the service is going to go on properly for Krishna's pleasure, they've got to relate to one another properly as servants of the Lord and be sensitive towards one another. And how are you sensitive towards one another? You're concerned about each other's spiritual advancement. Devotional service, Krishna consciousness, is not some kind of like macho individualistic struggle where you raise yourself up and push everybody else down. Like, I guess in the States, they say some kind of Marine Corps, where you're out to show that you're number one, and you can survive longer than everybody else, and you're tougher than everybody else, and then you just kick away the weak ones. And so you're the only one left, you know, King of the Mountain. The kids, they play this game here called King of the Mountain? Well, in some countries they do. The kids pick out one little mound. They call it a mountain, of course. and they... I guess it's basically the boy kids who do this. And then one boy kid gets on top of the mound and says, I'm the king of the mountain. And all the other kids try to tear him down. No, you're not king of the mountain. And they have a big scrap. It's like, I guess, you know, to me, you know, it looks like a rugby game. So they all, you know, they pull the kid down, and then some other kid asserts himself, I'm king of the mountain. And all the other kids jump him. And this goes on and on and on, and they say it's fun. So sometimes we adults, we also do like that. Who's king of the mountain? And everybody says, oh, no, you're not. And they pull him down. And then somebody else says, oh, I'm king of the mountain. No, they pull him down, and on and on it goes like this. We don't want our temples and communities to turn into this kind of a thing. If we're all genuinely concerned about each other's spiritual advancement, that means we're concerned about
how each one of us renders devotional service. Then, that is care and compassion. That is love. And we will feel Krishna's blessings if we do that. But if we ignore God brothers and God sisters, whatever they're going through, and just, it's all the mind. You're just being mental. Get fired up. Now throw some slogans at them. You'll learn. Yeah, I guess you just gotta be beat by Maya. Then in 20 years you'll get to where I am at. If we treat devotees like that, that is not very mature. On the other hand, there's no need to get sentimental and start having, as separate from devotional service, start just absorbing ourselves and each other's personalities without taking into account devotee means service. What service am I doing? So these things take discrimination. They take maturity to deal with. And it's true, sometimes we go up one extreme or the other. It's like driving a car. You've got to stay in the lane. You can't go too far right and too far left. So we are all learning. And certainly, there's no doubt, as we're approaching Prabhupada's centennial, that devotees are getting much better at steering between these two extremes, either becoming very sentimental and just discussing one another's personal concerns as separate from devotional service, as if devotional service is not the necessary medium. Or on the other hand, we're trying to work hard for Krishna, but we treat our fellow devotees like objects on the shelf, as if each person doesn't have some kind of internal struggle that he or she is going through. Everybody's going through some internal struggle. Now, even a devotee who you may think is very well situated, still, that devotee is going through an internal struggle, but the struggle is, how can I serve Krishna better? How can I do more service? That's also a struggle, but it's a spiritual struggle. It's Vaikuntha. It's not Kuntha, material struggle, full of material distress. Even on the spiritual plane, a devotee is always striving, how can I serve the Lord better? So, there's always something, in some way, that we can relate to devotees amidst devotional service, which will increase their service and increase our service. So we should take an example from Prahlad Maharaj, who had these concerns. He was lamenting, how can they do it? How can they live like this? And what particularly is he lamenting about? Very picturesque here. And Prabhupada used to really love to get into it. Maya Sakaya Bharam. He practically roared into the microphone. What is this Bharam? It's a false burden or responsibility. And what is Maya Sakaya? It's a temporary illusory happiness. It's something that appears to be happiness but isn't. He would give the example, for example, that in the cities, people would build airports. Of course, in Sydney, it's not so bad, but in places like New York, it's horrible. You build an airport, and it takes 2 hours to get from one city to another, but just to get to the airport, it takes 2 hours. And so people think this is progress, as they're, especially during the rush hours, you're trying to go to the airport. In fact, you have to leave 3 hours ahead of time. In New York, it's like that. So, but they think, never mind the delays, I'm going to the airport for progress. After 3 hours, I'll get to the airport, and then in a few hours, plane ride, I'll be at my destination. Then another 3 hours from the airport in the other city to where I'm going. And they think this is progress. Well, Prabhupada said that is Maya Sukaya, a false appearance of progress. Only the appearance, but not actually progress. So, we can think of the material world in that way as a constant presentation of false appearances. You get the appearance of happiness, the false promise of happiness, but you never get the real thing. So, my family, I've got to
has some vision of stability and security in the future. So it seems like a conflict. And you can really cry out about it sometimes. And when people cry, when our devotees cry out about it, they go to one extreme or the other. Oh, it is all temporary. Just forget it. Who cares? Who cares about my kids? Who cares about my wife or husband? And of course, then sooner or later you find another wife or husband. And of course, then sooner or later you find another one to care about, even though it's all temporary. Or else, you go to the other extreme. Enough of this artificial renunciation stuff preached by heavy swamis who never were born in a family and don't know what a family's like. Enough of that stuff. We are going to act like our families are eternal. It's the all in all. That is the real Yuga Dharma. That's the second half of the movement. That Vanarsan Dharma means your family is it. And you act like it's going to be around forever, and that way you'll actually be successful. Of course, both these things are extremes. How to resolve those two extremes and hit the mark right on the head? It can't be done with material intelligence. It is impossible. You'll see some hints in the Bhagavatam that those who have families should treat the whole situation like you're a guest in a hotel. You should be very caring for the other fellow guests, and you should take care of them very nicely. At the same time, know that people will be moving on, not even in their next life, even before that, in this life, family members will be moving on. If you go to you ever happen to see how people are treated in a very nice hotel or place, boarding house, or some place where people stay more than a few days. Of course, the motive is money, but the staff is treating everybody with the greatest concern, the greatest so-called compassion, the greatest care. And the people are only going to be there one or two or three days. Yet, in a proper hotel, I know about these things because nobody's considering plans for making a Krishna conscious, like, backpacker's place, youth hostel, something I tried in Malaysia, which worked very well. So, the people there, they're there only for a short time. They're guests. But the secret to building your business, or if you're running a Krishna conscious kind of hotel or backpacker's place, a secret of your preaching success, so it'll come back again, is act like they're going to be there forever. Although you know they're going to leave in a few days. Act like they're going to be there forever. At the same time, you know they're only going to be here for a few days. So while they're there, you're thinking, I've got to give them. Of course, if you're a materialist, you're thinking, I've got to arrange everything to their full satisfaction. And if you're a devotee, you're thinking, I've got to arrange for their maximum exposure to Krishna consciousness while they're here for this short time. That is my responsibility. I'm their caretaker while they're here for a short amount of time. So, these are some hints that the Bhagavatam gives us. But actually, to develop the intelligence to act on those hints is difficult. And that is why Srila Prabhupada said that particularly for those who are householders, it is almost impossible to make advancement without deity worship. It is the attention to the deity and the deities in the center that resolves these contradictions. Otherwise, you will go a bit batty trying to handle the two points. It's temporary. No, but I have to do my duty. But it's temporary. We're not the body. But it is my wife. It is my husband. They are my children. I have a responsibility. Back and forth you go. Materially, it won't be resolved. But if your life, if your family is centered on the deities, then Krishna will empower you how to resolve these two extremes. And even without your knowing it, Krishna will make arrangements so that your family can successfully navigate between these two dangerous extremes. It's like trying to navigate a boat between rocks. It's very, very difficult to do materially. And that's why, perhaps, so many of our dear God brothers and God sisters who are householders, it could appear that they get a little pride because it is very excruciating and very difficult how to navigate. But if we follow Prabhupada's instructions and base our family life on the deities, then it becomes, it actually becomes easy. Inconceivably, it does that. Even one may have material shortages in one's family. It happens sometimes. But if the deities are in the center, then one always feels very spiritually connected to Krishna, and one's family members feel very connected to one another in Krishna's service. So that is the secret. I remember in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, the late Hayagriva, he had just been married. This is about 1968. And he wrote to Prabhupada, how in the world can I as a householder conquer lust? It's just impossible. Indulgence won't solve it. The more I indulge, the more the fire rages. How can I stay away from it? I mean, after all, the wife was right there. What to do? It's enough to drive one crazy. And Prabhupada wrote him back that there's only way to conquer the enemy, Mr. Lust, as Hayagriva called him. The only way to conquer the enemy, Mr. Lust, is through deity worship. So Prabhupada very strongly said that that is a necessity for those of us who are householders, because that is Krishna's special mercy. Prabhupada explained again and again that actually the deities are there in the temple, especially for the householders, so that they may organize their whole life around the deities. They can raise their children around the deities. In this way, the impossible contradiction between the temporary and the permanent, or acting like it's permanent, that'll be solved. Just like here at your farm here, you have a very wonderful situation. You have Radha Krishna deities, very great responsibility. If you ignore them, things will never be successful, because that's the nature of Radha Krishna deities. They make sure if you ignore them, you get nothing. You can have all the plans in the world, you can be fired up, you can have the best manager, but if you ignore the deities, believe me, Krishna will make sure you get nowhere. And you'll, as the years go by, you'll watch. We had great plans. We were really fired up. Things looked like they were really going to break open. And then you'll notice the enthusiasm just kind of dissipates. Things just fizzle out again and again. That's because we are ignoring the deities. Gornatai, liberal. There it is. Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, less liberal. Radha Krishna, very demanding. Ignore them at your own peril. And what happens when you ignore them? Your family life becomes a wreck. If you're anywhere in your vicinity, your farm becomes a mess. You get this feeling that you just can't get out of the rut. You're like a sports team. You just feel like you just can't get on the scoreboard. I don't know rugby terms, but in gridiron we say you get down to near the goal line. You know, on the 10-yard line before the goal line, you just can't get it into the end zone again and again and again. There are some teams like that, that they march all the way down the other end of the field and just can't take it in for, I guess, a try, as you say. They just can't do it. And sometimes, as devotees, we feel that way. What's going on? We just can't get it. We just can't score up some points. That's because we're ignoring Sri Sri Radha Krishna. So, Prabhupada, he would like to describe Indian villages as the perfection of civilization. How the whole village was organized around the deities. Yes, everyone had their families, and even everyone had their own little houses. But the center of attraction, the center of life for the whole village was the deities. So Prabhupada described that even earlier in this very 20th century, in the Indian villages, husband and wife and children, they would work during the day in the fields, and then after their evening meal, they would walk maybe 1, 2, 3 kilometers to a place where everybody gathered to discuss Krishna Katha every evening. And then after the Krishna Katha discussion was over, they would walk back to their homes, another 1 or 2 kilometers. And while they were walking home, they would be discussing the Krishna Katha that they had heard in their program. So when they finally got home, they would just take rest, and then they would just dream about Krishna, because they had their evening get-together, sangha, discussing Krishna. On the way home, the family individual family would discuss what they heard, and they're always talking about Krishna, and then they would just take rest and dream about Krishna. So Prabhupada said, this is actually civilization. So it's very easy for us to do that here. You have Radha Krishna, they're surrounded by big farmlands, and everyone has their nice houses situated very close to the temple. It just takes some spiritual vision to go along with the bring it material plans. Of course, plans for serving Krishna are not material, but we don't want to ignore the deities. Otherwise, the plans will take on the appearance of being material, and then we'll start to fight, and then we'll trade one plan for another plan, and even if the plan is indeed brilliant and should work, because we're ignoring Sri Sri Radha Krishna, the plan doesn't work. So these things are very important, especially with Prabhupada's centennial coming. If our householders remember how to do the impossible, otherwise it is impossible. If you ask me for my opinion, and this is just my personal opinion, it's more difficult to be a householder than a sannyasi. That's just my personal opinion. I took the easy way out. But to be a real Krishna conscious householder, that takes a lot of intelligence, a lot of dedication, a lot of fortitude, and you are forced to rely upon Krishna. We're seeing that our householders are forced to rely upon Krishna, because otherwise you can't figure it out. It's just so difficult. One person is successful in economic development. Oh, that's an ideal householder. He's got money salted away. He's got a nice house. Well, he doesn't have time to come to the temple at all, but look, he's got security. Whereas look at me. I've been serving in the temple for so long, and I'm renting other devotees what they're doing. We'll be able to resolve these contradictions between security and the inevitable insecurity of this world. All that will come with Krishna in the center, because Krishna resolves all contradictions, and the Archa-Vigraha is especially meant for families, for the children, for the mothers and fathers. Just like yesterday, had the play about Ram Leela, all the children were involved, the mothers were involved, the husbands were involved, and it was very pleasing, even for those who are not in the family order of life. It was pleasing to see things in relation to Krishna. Of course, maybe when you're a young brahmacharya, you have to show how tough you are. And it was just a play with a bunch of women and kids. You can stick out your chest, big Balaram brahmacharya. It was just a play with a bunch of women. But actually, you have to allow for that in the beginning. If you're going to really take up the Brihad Vrata, the great vow, sometimes even these days, it's not only the men who, a few men who want to do that, even some women they don't want to marry, whatever. The point is, if you're going to actually take up that vow, you need a little kind of fanaticism in the beginning. But if you're actually going to maintain that vow, you've got to mellow out a bit. You've got to kind of learn to see everything in relation to Krishna and take your satisfaction in that way. Oh, just look. I don't have a family. I don't intend to have one. But just see how all these families are acting out Ram Leela. You see things in connection to Krishna. You're happy. Oh, just see how the Lord is being glorified. Just see how the Lord's servants are glorifying Him. So all these things are balanced, and the contradictions and fights are resolved simply by having the deity in the center. Otherwise, you can go on having conferences, and you can call up devotees for hours on the telephone. What do you think we should do? Should it be like this? Should it be like that? What are they doing over there in New Mexico or Montana? I hear they've got a new enclave, a new community in such and such a place, in New Zealand, and they're doing it like this. Maybe we should do like that. It'll just spin and spin and spin and spin. It's Krishna's way of letting us know that if your community is fortunate enough to have deities, you must place them in the center. And that will make your family life successful. Through thick and thin, there's no doubt. Some or other, even unconsciously, everyone will make spiritual advancement. Even amidst the inevitable domestic turmoil, everyone will still make spiritual advancement, and that's what counts. So, any questions, comments?
No, it's a bit late because of the Dhammadharastic prayers. Yes.
Everything fits into Krishna consciousness within the ocean of devotional service. Otherwise, there's no such thing as devotee or Krishna consciousness. So if, as I've said, if you make the center of family and society the arch of Vigraha, then everyone will become empowered in understanding of how to balance these things, the temporary and the eternal. In fact, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, just to finish, Krishna says, yada yada yadharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious principles. Prabhupada can translate that verse another way. Dharmasya glani means the proper balance between material and spiritual affairs is not kept. He says when that happens, Krishna comes personally. Because on the one hand you have the body, but you're not the body, you have to maintain it. On the other hand, you're the spirit soul. So whenever there is a big problem in the balance between material and spiritual affairs, Krishna comes personally to solve it. The Prabhupada would explain that verse sometimes like that. So we have Krishna here. You can look at Krishna and ask him, please solve these imbalances. And if you put him in the center of your family and society, then you will see the inconceivable miracles happen, because Krishna can easily resolve these contradictions that boggle our minds so much. And if we ignore Krishna,